There was once a priest who spent part of every night making sandwiches for the homeless. He traveled around the poorest parts of the city and distributed them each day. And even though his day was already full, this late night activity didn't overwhelm him. It actually made him very happy. He didn't do it out of guilt, duty, or any external pressure. He shared freely and openly in a way that made a difference for him. Even when the street people rebuffed his offer of food, he didn't feel rejected or angry because he wasn't doing it for the reward or acceptance or appreciation. Well, the media found out about him and printed a story about his work. Instantly, his reputation grew and he became a minor celebrity. The public, including his fellow priests, started sending him money to support his ministry. Much to their surprise, he sent back the money to each and every one of them with a one-line note that said, "Make your own," adjective that I shouldn't use in church, "sandwiches." Here is a man who is serving others, literally serving them food. He is not, though, a leader. Another story. After emancipation, Cary Steele Logan got a decent paying job with the Central Railroad at the Union Station in Atlanta, Georgia. She worked hard, she saved her money, eventually earning enough to be one of the first black landowners in Atlanta, purchasing a two-bedroom home just on the edge of the city. At that time, the rail yard and station was a regular dumping area for unwanted children, even infants. Having grown up an orphan herself, Mrs. Logan felt compelled to help these youngsters. She obtained permission to use a boxcar during the day for the children to play in, and at night, she'd bring them to her home to feed them and care for them. She wrote her own autobiography and sold copies of it on the street to raise money. She went to community groups for money, and she sold her little two-bedroom house to purchase a four-acre lot outside of the city where she erected a three-story brick orphanage. In that day, it cost $5,000 to build and was completed in 1892. In her spare time, Mrs. Logan volunteered as a probationary officer. She felt it was important to intervene early in children's lives so that they would not grow up to be, quote, material for the prison's chain gangs. The county and state each gave her orphanage money because each recognized that a dollar invested in that home may save the state a fortune later. The older girls that lived in the home helped keep expenses down by serving in the house. The Cary Steele Logan Home still operates to this day, providing refuge and services to children in need. Their records suggest that they have helped over 20,000 children. Cary Steele Logan was a woman who served others. She was not, though, what we think of as a typical leader. You probably never heard of her before today. Today, when I'm talking to you about servant leaders and lead servants, we'll start with servant leaders. I've always been a little troubled by this idea of a servant leader. Don't get me wrong, I think it's a great idea, but I'm not sure we do great things with it. Sometimes I think that we have the ideas of servant and of leader so closely tied together, at least in the church, so closely tied together that we can't really think of them apart. We think all people who serve are servant leaders, and all people who lead must be servant leaders. But we end up doing a great disservice to people and to our church when we make that blanket assumption. We identify someone who serves others, who works tirelessly, who needs no applause, and we say, see, that person is a leader, a servant leader. And then we very often rush that person into an actual position of leadership that they are neither seeking nor have the personality or the skills for. And then things don't get done. Expectations aren't fulfilled. The servant leader who didn't aspire to leadership anyway is discouraged, frustrated, becomes burned out. And those who are trying to follow, who are looking for direction, become equally discouraged, frustrated. And though they may not burn out because very little is asked of them, they very likely will drop out. At the same time we're focusing on those servant leaders, we may miss the actual leaders, those with the personality and skills and vision to actually inspire and motivate people. We might miss them because they don't seem to be humble enough. Or we don't think of them first as servants, so we never think of them as leaders. They can end up frustrated and move on as well. So the question is, how did we come to this point where we in the church see all leaders as servants and all servants as leaders, ignoring the vast majority of us that are not leaders, but are still vital, necessary, and faithful? I think it's mostly because of the last couple of verses that we read this morning. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. We're in trouble when we forget all the things that came before those verses. James and John, they came forward to Jesus and they said, "Teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask you to do." And Jesus, because he's not that kind of guy, didn't just say, "Sure, name it." He said, "What is it that you want me to do?" And they said, "Grant us to sit one on your right and one at your left when you come into your glory." And Jesus said to them, "You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, to be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with?" And notice they jumped in without knowing what it required and said, yes, we're able. And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or left hand, that's not really mine to give." This is where we find the true lessons about leading. Notice, the first thing that we find is that these disciples, James and John, are just ordinary humans. Notice, at this time, they're not St. James and St. John. That comes a lot later. They're just ordinary humans. They're not pious. They're not perfect. Yes, they're part of Jesus' inner circle. They've traveled with him. They've worked with him. They've watched him. But they still don't get a lot of things, as evidenced by the fact of their question. The question that starts this whole exchange: can we be your favorites? Can we be the most important? Because that's what it meant. That's what it meant to sit at the right and left hand of someone. That's what it meant. When guests were invited to dinner, the favorites, or those with the most money or prestige, sat nearest the host at the table. And the farther away you were from the host, the less favorable or important was your position. So these two aren't exactly getting the whole servant leadership thing, are they? They're not exactly getting the whole humility thing. So Jesus has to lead them, has to teach them. And he's not surprised by this need to lead them. Can't you tell by his response? He doesn't blow up at them. He doesn't laugh at them. He leads them to a better understanding. And the first question he asks is, "Are you able to drink the cup which I will drink?" Jesus was asking, "Are you able to suffer with me, to die the way that I will die?" Well, not exactly. I mean, he wasn't asking that literally. But what he was saying is, Are you able to die to self? Are you able to put others first sometimes? Are you willing to put your own agendas off sometimes? Are you willing to put others first? And then he asked him another question. Are you able to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? So you may not remember, but when we baptize adults who can speak for themselves, when we baptize children, we let adults who love them speak for them. But we ask the same kinds of things. So when we baptize people, we remind them that baptism is an outward sign of a decision that they have made in their heart and mind. A decision to follow Christ, to make the values Christ taught us, the values by which you will strive to live your life, values of love and justice, forgiveness and peace, mercy and compassion. And we say, if you have already made that decision in your heart, answer yes. It's an outward sign of something that's happened internally. And then the last thing Jesus says to them, because they've asked about this sitting at his left and right hand thing, is Jesus says, and I'm going to borrow a little bit from the Gospel of Matthew, because Matthew tells this same story, but he gives us one piece of interpretation that Mark leaves out that many scholars think is important to this story. Jesus says, it's not mine to decide. It's not mine to grant you to sit at my left or right in glory. That is up to God. What's happening there? Jesus is offering them an example. Even I, he says, am under authority. Even I submit to God's will in these things. So, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. What is that? It's confusing. That's what it is. Unless we take the whole thing in context, unless we start at the beginning with these two ordinary people who Jesus called to be disciples, who asked Jesus a question. And his answer was a textbook answer for how to lead. How to really lead, to be laity empowered for active discipleship. So often we get focused on what we think it might take to lead. Well, it might take a person who's an 8 on the Enneagram. It might take a driver. It might take a certain combination of the Myers-Briggs assessment. No, it takes what we have, what we bring, every one of us, because here's the secret and why I love the LEAD program so much. It's not about servant leaders. It's about LEAD servants, people who have learned to lead. Let me just share this with you. Laity empowered for active discipleship. What is discipleship? It's following. Discipleship is following. Those who lead in our church are those who are empowered by their faith for active following. This morning, we get to recognize two graduates of MCC's LEAD program. And for those of you who don't know, MCC Austin, for the last 2 years, has been the financial supporter for the LEAD program, meaning we have brought people in to from all over the U.S. to have their courses here. We've paid for their online courses. We've put them up in our homes. We have also enabled LEAD retreats in Europe. And if you read my article in the newsletter, you know that we got a 2.5-minute standing ovation from the entire General Conference when MCC Austin was recognized for your support of the LEAD program. It wouldn't happen without you. And I'm saying that because I want some of you to sign up for the next round, which starts in the new year. Let's bring forward Amanda and James. And Velma Garcia, who is one of the lead faculty, is going to make the presentation.